You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Todd Earwood. Todd is the founder and CEO of MoneyPath, where his team helps to build growth campaigns marrying the efforts of sales and marketing for their clients. Todd believes webinars are the most powerful and most overlooked marketing campaign. After helping his private clients produce webinars in over a dozen industries, he was encouraged by the folks at HubSpot and GoToWebinar to help others and share his webinar formula. As such, he has turned all of those successes into a webinar training program called Webinar Works. He's here to share his perspective on marketing, arguing that we should go back to the basics of true ROI-focused marketing to drive sales. Todd, welcome to the show.
Nick, it's great to be here, man. Thank you.
So I have to ask the question that the bio has primed us for, and that is, why webinars?
Well, I think we can all agree that the old webinar model is broken. I mean, it's not new technology, and as a marketer, we have 800 million different channels, it seems like, to pursue. I just believe webinars are one of the fundamental campaigns we've been overlooking, if especially because the old model is so broken. But if you do the webinars correctly, it can actually be a great representative of your brand. It can, if you buy into the educational inbound marketing model, then I believe it's a great medium for that. And, oh, by the way, it's the one thing that'll get the salespeople off our back when we hand them a webinar lead versus some of the other channels.
And why on that front? Why is a webinar lead better than a lead from another sales channel?
I believe it's because where else can you go to get engagement, tracked engagement, right? Not indirect measurements, but direct measurement of tracked engagement from a 30 to a 60 minute period of time with a prospect. And if you use a certain formula we've been using to actually segment out the interests and or areas of interest, right? Those methods give you then something that the salespeople actually really like, because you're asking questions for the prospect to select where they are in the buyer's journey. And that's something that I think every salesperson is willing to follow up with in a world where we don't always see eye to eye.
Well, you know, it gets me thinking a little bit, because I teach digital marketing, content marketing. And when I talk about content, you know, you're going through listing all the formats, and I feel like we spend a lot of time on video, on podcasts. Here we are on a podcast, blog posts. And I'll be honest, I mention webinars as, you know, in kind of the, and some other formats that exist are, but I always point out that a webinar is kind of an interesting hybrid vehicle, because it is kind of sitting at the intersection of a lot of different cool things, and it's kind of on its own in the way it unites those. You have the visual, which visual media, visual content is very big. You have audio content. You have the two of those combined, and you also have this real-time engagement that we're always after, that kind of one-to-one when we can. And then, as if that wasn't convenient enough, then you also have the whole thing recorded, and it may not be real time for those listening to it after the fact, but it's there as well for them to access.
I think that's the key, is that you've nailed it, Nick. Like, there's so many areas of versatility where you can use a webinar. I just think it's the old prescription of a solo voice somehow holding the interest of an audience to where 99% of the time there is no face. And that one voice is supposed to hold the interest. And oh, by the way, you're supposed to present yourself. You can't get any feedback in real time to find out if someone's paying attention or not, unlike a live audience. So I think those are the things that have been shown time and time again don't always work that well. So we've tried to change some of those critical fail points of the old model.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about those fail points, and you mentioned earlier talking about many organizations like HubSpot and GoToWebinar wanting you to share what your formula for success is. What is that formula? What does that look like?
At the beginning, as marketers, we love metrics. I love data and numbers, arguably more than most. But I've learned that we have these weird expectations of the metrics of success for a webinar, where in many content forms, when you release this episode, Nick, you're not going to measure the success on day one only downloads. There's a shelf life to this episode. And 2 years from now, someone's going to email me and ask me a question. And that's cool. But webinars, we get so worked up about the live event that we stop thinking about that video it produces at the end. And all the awesome things as marketers we can do now that we've created something whose output is likely an MP4 file that we can splinter into many more other content pieces just by doing one effort really well.
Right. So how do you advise to do it really well?
Well, number one, we're going to have a 2-person minimum, 3-person maximum webinar. So the way I tell people this is, unless Kevin Hart, the comedian, or Adele, the singer, is inside your organization, then you cannot host a solo webinar by yourself. You can't hold that stage for 45 minutes, especially with no video. So instead, I say we need to have a host and the presenter thought leader. One, that those people have different roles. So if, Nick, you are the thought leader, you should be up on your rightful throne, and I can be your host. And I can read your bio, and I can tell people how great you are. And I can also serve as a safety net when you get lost presenting information, because let's be honest, that still happens when we put some of our smartest clients and or coworkers on a webinar to present information. Sometimes we get lost. The 2-person model, A, causes pattern disruption when you're listening, and B, gives a safety net of when things get a little weird, because sometimes they do. You've got a safety net for the other person to save you. So that's a big differentiator, is stop focusing on the live event, have 2 people, and then start using polls effectively. Can I give you an example of that?
Absolutely.
Sure. So on the front end, I think of polls as bookends to your webinar. I want the host to present a poll that's typically a softball poll, but I had a client recently who did this really, really well. He's in the HR software business, and his poll question was, do you believe you need more candidates to hire the right person? And the answers were yes, no, is the Pope Catholic? And everybody giggled, just like you, and they said yes and Pope. But the answer was actually maybe no. If you're above X applicants, it's probably your screening process, which of course led perfectly and as a segue into the webinar content. Now, softball polls, we're seeing over 60% of people are willing to click the button to get engaged, right? When you have 2 voices going back and forth and a cadence of content, you're getting less people clicking off to Facebook. And at the end of the poll, this is where we finally start segmenting those leads for our sales team. And that is, you ask one of 2 questions. The first question is, do, now that you've learned this information, what is your next action step? And you give them prescriptive answer choices such as, this is interesting, I need to do more research. Not a hot lead. We need to nurture that as marketers and put more content in front of them. The second option would be something along the lines of, I like this, but I need to hand it off to a colleague. Okay, we didn't find the decision maker, but we have progress. And then finally, it could be something along the lines of, I really like this information. I need to know next steps. Well, that's a really warm lead that you can measure, and we can stop the debate of MQL and SQL just by using smart segmentation polls at the end.
Right.
Those are the kind of things, man, if you think about it, when you've got solo webinars and you've got, you know, one person trying to hold the attention with zero engagement in the middle, those kind of things just are a recipe for yet another boring webinar.
Well, I think that engagement in the middle is key, because a lot of times I think that's a mistake that we're going to hold questions till the end, and you've gathered everybody there. And I'd say the downside beyond that kind of wonderful multimedia benefit that I painted the picture of a few moments ago, the other downside is that it's a medium where people are plugged in staring at their screen, where there's probably at least a dozen other things. There's email, there's Facebook, there's all sorts of other rabbit holes that they could end up falling down if you don't keep them. And I think we have to be realistic. I mean, as wonderful as we'd like to believe that we are as marketers, as thought leaders, I don't know that we're going to be able to captivate someone for that long without bringing them into what we're doing.
I think that's right. I think we've seen internet marketers on the direct response side have twisted this in a way where they're doing constant pattern disruption and storytelling and craziness and like faking that it's live. And oh my gosh, I can't believe we have 1,200 people on air. And Phil from Sarasota just asked this question. Like, that's garbage. I've never seen a relationship in life start with deceit and turn out well. So I think we can just dismiss that. But what they do a good job of is making sure it's not monotone. It's the pace of the content is constantly changing, along with inserting polls, inserting different engagement points, and not just, frankly, I mean, if you think about the underpinning that we're all kind of overlooking on webinars, we're using the world's least favorite presentation tool, which is PowerPoint. Like, we've chosen the least favorite, and somehow that and one voice is supposed to carry the day, and it just won't.
Yeah, well, and let's talk about the one voice too, because beyond the pitfalls that you talked about with being one voice, a lot of times that one voice is probably making a couple different mistakes you could make. One, they could be reading. They could just either from reading or just because of delivery patterns have a monotone delivery in which it's not very interesting to listen to, but we're so excited to have one of the most amazing thought leaders joining us today. And
that's it.
You know, and I do this joke voice, air quote joke voice, and I feel like I've been on that webinar. I've heard that voice.
I feel like I was on that last week a couple times. I think we can easily identify what we don't like in the webinar space. It's just this, you know, when you mentioned the word earlier, it's perfect for what, you know, I think fortunately we figured out as we've gone down that webinar rabbit hole, we decided we can't and will not come out of it, because it is that hybrid that has marketing and sales value, which I think is so special about it, because it's not the end all be all, but it can be a centralized focal point from a content perspective, especially if you start thinking about that video at the end and what you can do now that you've got a 30 to 60 minute video. What are all the interesting ways you can take that video and replicate them and repurpose it into more content without having to rework everything?
You know, you've mentioned a phrase a few different times, and I think it's a really interesting one to think about, both in the context of webinars and just standing out today, and that is this idea of pattern disruption. And I think that patterns are valuable. It's how we make sense of the world around us. But at the same time, we need to both create patterns as marketers, but we also need to disrupt those patterns, to kind of cut through the clutter. And I think that a lot of times, you know, best practices, case studies make all of these things so close to us. And what that often creates is a world where we are making marketing like someone else's marketing, that it is... you know, that it looks and sounds exactly like your webinar, which is what I think webinars should be, but maybe that's not the best. Maybe that doesn't successfully disrupt the pattern.
I think if you think about, I think you're right. Pattern disruption does matter. I do think what we see is we cannot also forget. I like to poke at PowerPoint, even though I actually love the tool and I believe you can use it in an elegant an effective way, but I love to poke at it.
Yeah.
PowerPoint, we also change the visual disruption. Let's just say for some magical way, we somehow got your attention, Nick, and you're not over on Facebook and we're still watching the webinar. And let's just say, heck, you even showed up for the live webinar, because having talked to the Go Webinar folks last month when I was at their headquarters, they probably have the largest data set on webinars. They know already that 20% of people only sign up for the webinar for the intent of watching the replay. They never intend. I would argue it might be bigger, but their data says 20%. So I would say you need to disrupt the visual as well. And as marketers, sometimes because we already have our pre-approved template, which is this is the title slide, this is the bolded slide, this is the paragraph slide, I think you also can do simple things. Again, I think keep disrupting the visuals and the audio matter, because we'll do things as simple as reverse out the next slide. If your brand is red, black, and white, the next slide is not going to have a white background. It's going to have a red background. Keep it moving. Keep it different.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned poking at PowerPoint, and I think because I also teach communication and effective, you know, making slides. And I think that a lot of times that PowerPoint, the software application, is sort of the scapegoat, because it's usually people doing bad things with us. I think that it made a lot, it really democratized graphic design. And all of a sudden you didn't need to know how to use Photoshop or Illustrator to do these to convey design. And I think that we've lost kind of that step of making sure that we know what we're putting on screen and why.
I think you're right, and I do poke at PowerPoint. I think Keynote's in the same camp.
Yeah.
And just because it's on my Mac doesn't mean it's better. It's still, if you've got a terrible message, obviously, we can't blame the software. And if we present that message, even if it were a good message and it were concise, if we present that message in a visual way where we had 17 bullet points on the slide, well, you're setting yourself up for failure. That, again, that's not PowerPoint or Keynote's fault. But I think you're dead right. You've got to have a good message. You have to find a way to convey that visually. And in this case, because it's on the webinar, if you're not going to turn on your video camera, you probably need to find a way to make sure it's not monotone voice on the audio side and you have two people. Those will smooth over and cover many, many, many sins of presentation.
So we've talked a bit about using polls, about not trying to do the webinar all by yourself, to not go it solo. Are there other mistakes that we should avoid in putting together an effective webinar?
I think people are missing two big opportunities. Number one, webinars are an amazing re-engagement campaign. So when you can dip back into that CRM and get a list of leads that sales refuses to talk to, or you've pushed through every possible campaign and nothing's happened, you'd be shocked how many times webinar can reignite a good percentage of those leads. And I have a real life example. There's a company that they had, of course, their top 100 prospects in the industries they serve, and they were skeptical of the webinar. And I said, let's go for the re-engagement because you don't want to hand over your hot sales leads. I get it. We dipped into the CRM. We got some super cold, dead leads, and we started sending them. And the two things we did differently are, number one, we called it a private webinar and we didn't promote it on social. And we said, this is only for people that are receiving this email and you cannot share with a colleague. And you'd be shocked at what that does to a person. Naturally, people thought it was more exclusive and signed up.
Right.
But the interesting part was somebody not only registered and sat through and engaged in the polls, and at the end, he clicked on that button of segmentation to say, I am interested and I need to hand this off to a colleague. When they followed up with that person, this was the fourth largest prospect in their industry. And that was the CEO that signed up for it. He'd been in their CRM for 3 years. And we tracked it all the way back to one of those fish bowls at a trade show booth. And he tried to win the iPad. He didn't win the iPad. We put him through our nurture sequence. We handed it off to a sales rep. Sales rep couldn't convert. Put him in a different nurture sequence. Always had email newsletter. All those things they tried. And here's the amazing question he asked, Nick. This is really interesting, guys. I'm going to introduce you to so-and-so. But I have to ask, how have I never heard of you guys before? And they were stunned. They'd thrown everything they had in their marketing and sales book at him.
Wow.
And all that had not penetrated through his big shield of objections and barriers and gatekeepers. And he literally didn't know who they were, even though they're literally the third or fourth largest person in their industry. Like, he is the third or fourth largest, and they've been constantly trying to reach out to him for 3 years. So a re-engagement campaign, if you call it a private webinar and you will not put it on your website or your social channels, your registrations and the value of that content will go up. And the second thing to do that people are missing out on is when you follow up, everyone's willing, of course, to follow up with those who actually attend the webinar. And most marketers are willing to focus on emailing, a follow-up sequence to those who registered and did not attend. But I suggest you also email the people who never registered, who you originally invited to the private webinar, and we can pick up another 15% or so of people right there just by emailing them back and just market a replay, but instead say, it's here for you to watch right now, immediate access. And that's another quick way to get more engagement, and then put them. And then now once they watch the replay, I then follow up with an email sequence on those folks just as if they attended the live event.
Wow, by bringing up email in the webinar context, I believe that we now have all of the overlooked marketing channels represented right here on the podcast. So I think we could maybe simplify the advice and say, if we could get the meat and potatoes of email and webinars corrected, we'd be on our way to driving sales and ROI in the new year ahead.
I believe that's true. All the dull, non-shiny objects are the ones that we're polishing and perfecting. And hopefully, I do agree, meat and potatoes is not sexy, nope. But it drives a lot of value when done correctly.
Awesome. Well, Todd, what is a brand that has made you smile as we start to wrap things up here?
I'll tell you, recently, as a person who travels about 30% of my life, which there's some like hardcore road warriors out there that are way beyond that. I'm in love with this brand of luggage called Travel Pro. Again, it's not, it's not a high end brand, but they serve an audience, and all their materials inside the whole product is built for a guy like me who wants to be efficient with how I pack, who doesn't want to pack a ton of stuff. But the inserts they have and little instructions cards they had, I recently bought a new piece of luggage and I thought, man, these guys get me. And they do minimal, they do a lot of paid direct advertising, but their brand has stayed true to the name Travel Pro. Lets me kind of aspire. I don't want to be a road warrior, but when I do travel, I want to travel efficiently. And I think that company has just nailed the guy like me who won't be on the road on a plane every week, but when he does, wants to have it easy. They're nailed it for who I want to be and how good the product can be for me.
Awesome. Well, as someone that's always on the go myself, I will have to check that out as well. Todd, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, you can find me. I'm on all the social channels, last name Earwood, E-A-R-W-O-O-D. And then we're at webinarworks.io. Again, the meat and potatoes people for marketing. I didn't know, no one's ever called me that, Nick, but you're not wrong. Like, it's pretty right. So, but we chose the .io domain because we're trying to put the science behind it and what that psychology and testing over and over and over can do in a formulaic manner can re-engage the meat and potato method into something totally new. And your audience, we have a page built just for them. So you can go to webinarworks.io/onbrand and get all the free resources there.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Todd, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Nick, thank you.
And a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. OnBrand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this episode, at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.